Hi, how are you, Adrian King?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm doing well. How was your Sunday?
It's beautiful now that I'm seeing your face. Look at you.
Hi. Thank you. I see you're all decorative for Halloween. Unfortunately, it's November 1st.
I thought I'd share it with you, even though it's a day late, huh?
Yeah.
We can extend the season just a bit.
What did you do for Halloween?
Not much. Yeah. This is the first Halloween I can say not much. Normally I'm playing and having a good time, but this time it was all very quiet. I live in the boonies here in Southern Oregon, and
yeah.
If trick-or-treaters find their way to my front door, they're going to get a big scare. You know what I'm saying? A big scare. But when I lived in New York and LA, I used to dress up like a witch and answer the door and have a lot of fun with the kids.
Yeah. Usually,
what did you do?
Well, for Halloween, if I ever get any trick or treaters, I'll hand out candy. I love to watch horror movies, so usually AMC Fear Fest, they show all the horror films.
Sure.
That's how I spend my Halloween.
I made that cut.
Yeah, you made it. What was it? Thursday, I think. Yeah, Thursday. They showed all the Friday 13th Thursday.
Yeah, it's. I know it's always hard to miss me around the holidays.
Yeah,
and these are my favorite holidays. Halloween is my favorite holiday.
Same. I could be a Scrooge sometimes. I know the day after Halloween's when everything starts going with Christmas, and they keep pumping up Christmas in the commercials. But I love Halloween.
Take it.
Yeah.
Me too. I think Halloween should be all the way through New Year's.
Yeah, I think so. 365 days.
Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, most of my fans believe the same thing. So we just do what we need to do.
Yeah. And I think everyone, they call it a mind frame for people that love Halloween. It's more of just a mind frame or state of mind.
It's true. I think they also said that we're doing much better during this crazy pandemic time because... Yeah. We've like surrounded ourselves with the possibilities of all these tragedies way ahead of most people.
Yeah. I think that affected trick-or-treating too.
We're waiting for the zombies to come out of the walls any day, right?
Yeah. It could be any day. It may be after the election this Tuesday.
No kidding. That's what I was talking about. That's where I was coming from.
The Walking Dead is coming. Oh, man.
Oh, my God. Anyway, so what's happening back in my old stomping grounds? You know, I'm born and bred New Yorker.
Yeah, Oyster Bay, right?
Oyster Bay, but I was born in Brooklyn.
Yeah.
Spent the first couple of years in Sunnyside, then Lynbrook, then Oyster Bay. And then back on 27th Street across the street from FIT, went to FIT for a couple of, well, I graduated FIT, but I actually lived at the dorm the first year or so. And then I did what everybody does in New York, boop, ba-doom, 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 you know.
Yeah.
Wherever you can find a place.
Mm-hmm. What do you miss about New York?
Well, I have to tell you, the last time I was there, I felt like a tourist in my own city. So that kind of blew my mind, you know?
And, yeah.
And New York kind of was very different from what I remember when I was pounding pavements there. But I miss the theater so desperately that I would get back at least twice a year to get my Broadway fix, you know, my theater fix, my off Broadway. So having been an actress growing up on this, you know, and hoofing it all over the city. It's like, I knew it like the back of my hand. I knew New York City streets. Now it's like, oh my God, I just almost got run over by a bicycle, you know? It's like being in Amsterdam.
Yeah.
I miss the people. The people are great. I love New Yorkers, you know. I'm born and bred. It's in my soul. No matter where I live, no matter where I go, I'm a New Yorker.
Yep. You know?
And so give me a glass of wine and I start speaking like a New Yorker. You know, one glass of wine and all my New York comes back.
Yeah. Crystal Lake Wines.
Yeah. That was the gift. That was came out of nowhere. That was pretty amazing when I moved to Oregon. 16 years ago, we moved into wine country. And here, I'll show you a little. You want to see a little bit of my backyard?
Yeah, that's fine.
Let's see. I don't know if you can. Can you see that?
Yeah, we could see that.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, it's so beautiful here, and there's no cells. I mean, there's a price you pay for paradise. There's no cells. It takes you forever to fly here when I was flying, you know, because it's just one of those things that when you find it, you don't want to leave it. And so we retired here from LA. We literally tripped over this area, and we didn't know. My husband, which you'll enjoy this little tidbit, was George Romero's distributor. He just walked outside him.
Oh, wow.
Just got him. And so, hi, honey. Come say hello. This is Richard Hassanen.
Hello.
Hi, nice to meet you. Today. Welcome to the show. Adrian was just telling me that you work with George Romero.
Yeah.
Yeah. I worked with him on Creepshow, Knight Riders,
Day of the Dead, Dawn of the Dead. And you got Creepshow, the script from Stephen King for that.
Yeah, he wrote the script.
Wow.
Anyway, nice to meet you.
Yeah, nice to meet you.
Thank you for the price of one here. But what happened is we came up here for a little vacation, tripped over a piece of paradise, and the rest was history. We didn't know how we were going to pull it off, honestly. It's like we left LA and said, we'll figure it out. You know, if we have to work at Harry and David, they're down in Medford. You know, Harry and David, the shipping company repairs. We were ready to do that. Uh-oh, we're going to have a problem with audio in a second. Go ahead. Watch. This is life on the river.
Yeah.
You never know what you're going to get on your podcast, do you?
Yeah, you never know.
But So we moved up here, and the best winery down the road were horror fans. Go figure. I mean, and they said to me, we joined their wine club. It took them a couple of years before they divulged they were huge Friday 13 fans. And they invited me into their family. And I said, okay, I don't know what that means, but how could it be bad, right?
Yeah.
And I ran a tasting room there for a year. And during that year, I came up with the idea of Crystal Lake Wines with my own artwork for the labels. Mm-hmm. And that was a decade, over a 10 and a half years ago. And it's just taken off strictly by word of mouth because it's a family-owned winery. And no budget for over marketing or anything like that. So it's strictly word of mouth, and it's fabulous wine with my artwork, and I sign the bottles, and it's just been a cool thing. But saying that, now I'm so silly because it's on pandemic pause. I put it on pandemic pause until next spring, because I'm taking this downtime that everybody has right now. And I'm focusing on my art. I'm really trying. I started my own website, my own brand new website with my hands, my brain. It's a platform that you don't need code. So I could slowly figure this out. It's definitely a learning curve. But if taking this pandemic time to focus on my own art and what I want to do with what's left of my time on this planet. And that is just to take the good energy of the people that I've met through Friday the 13th over the past 16 years, because before that, without social media, I didn't even know there was a fan base, if you can believe.
Yeah.
and it's all about us as a community, as a horror community. Mm-hmm. I think horror fans are the best fans in the world. They don't judge, you know? They, even though I've got fans on both sides of the political situation right now, which is, as you know, so intense, we don't fight on our sites, you know, we just respect each other. And it's just a microcosm of what I think is good in the world, of the people that I know, and I want to make this website for them. And so I've been doing these blogs about Betsy Palmer, who played Mrs. Voorhees. Yes. And our relationship and what life was back in 1980. And also my artwork that's on the labels of the Crystal Lake Wines is there for viewing. And what I'm hoping to do with my website originally what I was hoping to do, except that I put on some original scripts. And so my website's gone a little crazy for me. What I want to do is really focus on my original art that now, being here on my property and not traveling so much and filming so much, I can just really give it the time it's always deserved, and it's always been on a back burner.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes your passions, for some reasons, don't get the energy that they deserve. For one reason or another, something else is always more important. And so I've actually taken this time to take that back for me, you know?
And that's important.
I think so. I think so. What other passions do you have besides what you're doing?
My main passion is radio, but I have to admit, I had James Jude Courtney on my show the other day, who played Michael Myers in the 2018 Halloween, as well as the upcoming ones. And he asked me the same question. When I was younger, I was always into horror movies, and I want to create horror movies when I was younger, but I got into music and sports and broadcasting and radio, and that's what I'm doing right now. But next semester, for my last semester at St. John's, I'm going to be taking cinematography classes, television production classes. So it may be turning out to be that I may be getting into film. I really don't know where this journey is going to take me.
Well, it's wonderful that you're open, because that's the thing I encourage people, that young people like yourselves that are creative and think they know where they want to go. Sometimes life takes you on a left or right turn, and you shouldn't be closed off to that.
Yeah.
You know, if it's, I always say I didn't end up doing what I'm doing through the front door. It's always been a side window or the back door, you know? It's not exactly what I had initially thought was going to be where I was going to end up. I mean, I used to, you're going to get a kick out of this. Mm-hmm. When I was at FIT, I had a boyfriend down at Georgetown University, and I would sneak away for the weekends. You know, Penn Station's right there. And I'd sneak down and I'd go see Yes and Jethro Tull at Georgetown University. And the bands, all the bands from, say, the Almost Famous soundtrack, right?
Yeah.
And I would get my boyfriend and his friends and myself tickets by putting on a press pass. No kidding, a press pass. And I'd go backstage and I'd interview them. I said, as an actress, I can do that. And so I would play a journalist. And literally, guess what? I interviewed Chuck Mangione once, right? Uh-huh. I got the lead story at the Georgetown Hoya. I'm not kidding you. This was like 1974, 75. So it's, you know, and I thought, well, maybe this is where I'll go in, you know? It's like, you just never know, but you've got to, whatever door opens, you kind of have to be open to go through it and not be afraid or not be so set in your mind that this is the only thing I feel like doing.
Yeah.
You know, so I'm glad to... Excuse the audio problem.
Yeah, no problem.
Richie's back.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. So tell me, what made...
It's harvest.
Oh, what was that?
Go ahead. No, I was just going to say it's harvest season.
What made you want to get into acting?
I didn't have a whole lot to say about it. My mom, when I was born, who lived in Queens, must have thought to herself, is all I could figure out. I did my first commercial when I was 6 months old. And she was bored and they needed more money, is all I can figure out. Because why else would you put your kid in a commercial at 6 months old? But that's how it happened. That's how it started. And I obviously was a baby that went to other people easily. So you get extra bonus points for that. By the time I was aware of what was going on, and I do remember how it evolved, I really enjoyed being around other people and their energies. Now, my brother and sister were thrown into the same scenario. They hated it. So they were out. They were out. I was the eldest. I was the guinea pig. And by the time I was eight, so she pulled me out of school. I was in Our Lady of Peace in Limbrook, but when I, first grade. And so I was out of the business then because I had to go to school. And lo and behold, after a year, I did not like not being able to go and play on camera. You know, this was a big deal in my life. And I realized that I was kind of hooked at that time. And I begged my mom to let me back in. So she found a teacher. She said, if we're going to do this, we're going to do it right. She found me a manager. We found a great acting coach. And within a year, I was doing the Hallmark Hall of Fame, Inherit the Wind, with very serious actors. I won't bore you with their names because no one will know them. But back in the day, they were huge, you know? Yeah. And I was hooked. I knew that I wanted to be an actress. I just knew I wanted to be around this group of incredible, talented people that could create another world that I could escape to. And to find that out at eight and realize it, fully focused on it. I had a resume by the time I was in high school, and we were on split sessions, Oyster Bay High School. I got out at 12:17 p.m. Because we started so early because the schools were overcrowded. So we started early and got out at 12:17. And I took the Long Island Railroad from Syosset into this city. Ninth grade, it was a different world. And I was going to my auditions, taking my singing lessons, taking my dancing lessons, whatever, going to auditions. If I booked something, I got the day off as long as I could keep my grades up. My principal was cool with that. And that's what happened. And I come home with my dad, madman, from advertising. He was definitely Madison Avenue man, Mad Ave. And we take the Long Island Railroad home together. It was very trippy. And I went to FIT. So it was, I never stopped working since I was 6 months old, if that's crazy. Right?
That is crazy. That really is. Did you set out to be in the horror genre?
No. Actors set out to work. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like commercials are your first step. You know, radio commercials, then you evolve to the second step. So I did voiceovers my whole life. I did radio my whole life. Mel Blanc. As a kid, I did all sorts of voiceovers with Mel Blanc. I mean, imagine that. CBS Radio Theater I was doing as a teenager. It's just something that I was passionate about. And so it never felt like work to me. But I think if I hadn't been put into the business, I honestly think I probably would have been a fine artist. That was my major at FIT. I was accepted as a fine artist. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
Now that your passion is painting, because I want to get into the paintings in the movies in Friday the 13th. Were those your own paintings?
No, I found out, and it's very typical. Art directors like to have their own art in movies. Makes sense.
Yeah.
I mean, if I was an art director, I'd do the same thing. So it was, her name was Valerie, and she was her style was similar. We had similar styles, but I did sit up in the lifeguard on the seat, the big tall seat. What do they call those? The lifeguard, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was sketching while Kevin Bacon and Harry Crosby were doing push-ups on the beach. You know, I had a few days where life was good before the murders were happening, and I could sketch. You know, it was a pretty time in New York.
Yeah.
New Jersey. The tri-state area was in perfect color for autumn, as you know from the end of the movie.
Yeah, it was. How did you get connected with Sean S. Cunningham?
Well, Sean S. Cunningham and I got connected at the Minskoff Theater rehearsal hall when everybody else from New York City auditioned with me. We had an open call through backstage, and every single person under the age of 25 was probably there. And they had 3 days of casting. And there were like hundreds of people each day. I think I was number 313. And then I got a call back, and then I got a call back, and then I got a call back to read with the boys. Because we did, you know, it was a whole process in the summer of 1979, long before you were born.
Yeah.
And then I got a screen test at the end of August, and with five other women. And it was intense. It was an intense callback, very physical, you know. And they still hadn't been able to find someone to play Mrs. Voorhees. They had to get their Alice first, because they needed to see who Alice was before they could find a Mrs. Voorhees. Or if they'd found a Mrs. Voorhees first, then they would have worried about Alice, because they had to be similar in size, you know, for it to work on screen. So I was cast. Sean called me after the screen test, told me I nailed it. And then Betsy Palmer, I was told, got the phone call 2 days later that she was cast. And she was like a half an inch taller than me.
What's interesting when I'm learning about the film is that I know Betsy Palmer wasn't that big in wanting to take the role for the film. She didn't think it was going to be a major success.
Oh, no. She said, no one's going to see this piece of shit.
Yeah.
And the story goes, and if you'd ever been to any, I love anybody who knows the story knows that Betsy and I were kept separately during filming, and we didn't reconnect till 2004 through conventions.
Wow.
And it was quite an amazing thing, because she honestly only did the movie to get the 10 grand to buy a Scirocco, a car. Her car had died on the Connecticut Turnpike. And she said to her agent, I need 10 grand. What do you got for me? And he said, well, I got this horror movie. And she read it. She goes, and she told Victor Miller, the writer, this at a panel in Kentucky when I was in Lexington once when I was there. She goes, I never thought anybody was ever going to see this. She really said that. And so she did the movie, but she put every, it's not like she held back. She did this like it in her mind. When whatever she did 110%, you know. And so that's why I'm convinced to this day, without Betsy, this movie never would have gotten. Well, it was a perfect storm. It was Betsy. It was the music. It was Harry Manfredini. It was Tom Savini, the special effects. It was the casting of a young cast off Broadway that we were all so diligent about knowing our craft. And it was just a director and a crew that were passionate as well about really doing something. This was almost like, for Sean, if he didn't make this happen, his life was like, he was done, you know? This was all the money he had left in the world. And so it was intense, but boy, you could sure feel that passion just flowing. When I arrived there that morning with the kids, we'd come up on a van, the five of us, and we met at Columbus Circle at 5:30 in the morning, and we arrived there about 7:15. And they were, the crew was all ready, you know, and the costume people were all ready. And it was like, come on, we're going to start shooting this afternoon. I mean, it was super low budget. It was just like, let's go. And you could just feel the energy. It was going to be something special. Mm-hmm. There was no doubt.
I say it to this day, because I feel as though, in my opinion, Jason always overshadows the first one. When you think of Friday the 13th, everyone jumps to immediately Jason. But the first one is Mrs. Voorhees, and it's the best one out of the whole series. And something that we can look at another film is Scream. In the character, Casey Becker, I think that's what the character's name was in Scream, played by Drew Barrymore. She thought it was Jason Voorhees that was the killer in Friday the 13th.
Right.
But it was Pamela Voorhees.
That's right. And you know, if people don't see it from the beginning, they're confused. You know, it's like, as a matter of fact, I was watching this little funny YouTube of this lady in Knoxville, Tennessee, who watches the movies for the first time. I don't know if you happen to see it. She was hysterical because she kept on waiting for Jason to show up. So she goes, where's Jason? Where's Jason? It's like, and so she goes, I'm going to call this movie Mama Voorhees or Mama Jason. You know, it's like, this has nothing to do with Jason. It's great. The first one is more, it's a thriller. It's a psychological mystery as well as a slasher. And we got a lot of stuff all in this one little movie that gets overlooked a lot.
I think it's the scariest because the other ones, I feel like, you know, what's going to be built up, you know, what's going to happen. The first one, it was right. No one's ever seen anything like this. It was new and original.
Exactly. After a while you go, well, how many more ways can Jason kill somebody? Yeah. But no, Jason was Alice's dream. That's how it all started, you know, yeah. And Mama Voorhees was the best mama on the face of the planet because she would kill for her son, you know. But it's amazing that we're still talking about it 40 years later because we ran out of money throughout shooting and it took us 3 times to get that final scene right in the canoe. And by the last time it was October 12th, 1979, because I still have my date book with everything in it. And I share things on my website, adrianeking.com, that have like all of these original pieces of Friday the 13th history in it, because I have original continuity photos, because I honestly didn't think we were ever going to finish this movie. I didn't think it, in just in case I was hedging my bet, I was going to make a beautiful collage. You know, that's what I figured. I would take my script, I would take pages of my script, I would take continuity photos, and I make a great, that night that we had the fight on the scene, I have those notes, and I made a poster once. I should make another poster, but I saved everything because I honestly was surprised that we actually had enough money to finish the movie, you know? Yeah. So I was thrilled.
I'm sure you were.
Everyone was pretty happy about it. Except Mrs. Voorhees. Except Betsy. She didn't think anybody was going to watch it. So then her world crumbled. She got hate mail, and Siskel and Ebert called her every name under, you know, they gave out her address. Back in 1980, things were so different. You have no clue. They were so different. And oh my goodness. Yeah, I had a stalker. She had people writing hate mail to her home address. It was very different. But we survived.
Wait, they say out your address too?
No, they didn't send my address, but I had a stalker.
Yeah, I read about that.
Yeah. Life was very different back then. You know, there were no stalking laws. So when I reported it, it was like, well, when somebody physically assaults you, you let us know and then we'll get on it. And
it's that's ridiculous. That's ridiculous.
No, but that's true. That's the way it was back then. Before 1986, and I had two other friends also who had stalkers, and one of them, Teresa Saldana, she actually was attacked physically and hurt. And it wasn't until Rebecca Schaefer in 1986, her stalker actually killed her. She was on My Sister Sam on television, and that's when the laws finally changed, because it wasn't safe. You know, I was told by the cops that, well, what do you expect? You do a movie like this, you bring it on yourself, you know. And then poor Betsy Palmer, you know, she had done such great according to the experts, Siskel and Ebert, according to the reviewers, she'd done such incredible films that this one was so inferior and it was horror, which back then was a step up from porn. You have to understand, that's the way these people actually thought. Whereas when I was that age, when I was doing it, I mean, I loved horror films from the 60s. I thought they were fun.
Yeah.
But things changed, you know? And things were taken a lot differently back then.
Yeah, people are wacky.
People are wacky. Yes, they are. People are wacky. But the good news is we got the laws now. where 40 years later, whatever I went through was for a good reason, because I am here to let my people and anybody who needs any kind of assistance in knowing that there's a better day tomorrow. I'm here to say I am the ultimate survivor, because it was a tough time and I survived it and I went through hell and back. And I know a lot of people are going through that right now. You know, yeah. I know a lot of people are going through hell and it's not easy. And I'm the first one to say my life right now, it took me a long time and a lot of therapy to get here, but I'm happier than I've ever been. And so I tell your audience, if anyone's listening, that's holding on by a thread, I've been there. I've been there when those dark nights look really sometimes too dark. Just say a good prayer and that the light will be there tomorrow for you, and just take it one day at a time. And I am always open to anyone who needs me through social media. I try to be there. You know, it's hard for me to cover everyone, but I have definitely, I've been there, and I want people to know it can get better and it will get better. It will. Even at those darkest moments and those darkest nights when you don't think you're going to get through it, you just say a little prayer to whoever you believe in, and that you want to find the light, and that you will create something from your pain. And that's what you have to know. Incredible things come from pain. And everyone has a gift to give. And you have to give it to yourself first.
Mm-hmm. We appreciate you telling your story on here and offering that advice to the audience. Would you ever consider writing a book about how people can get over it?
You know, I've tried to write a book. It's so hard for me because some of the stuff I've really buried.
I think that's for the best.
I firmly believe there's no reason for me to go through that pain again if I have conquered it. And I thought at one point I had conquered it. And it wasn't until I re-engaged with my fans in 2004 at a convention. I'm trying to think of, it was in New Jersey, Newark, I think Newark, right outside of Newark Airport. It was a big chiller convention. And it was my first one. I didn't even have an 8x10 to my name. And Betsy Palmer was there and Amy Steele from Part Two was there as well. And it was during the Q&A, it was the first time I'd ever been on stage with my fans. Yeah. I didn't even know I had fans until Peter Brackey, who wrote Crystal Lake Memories, the book, interviewed me about a year and a half prior to that, told me I had three generations of fans around the world that looked up to Alice as a touchstone and needed to know my story so they could see me as the same type of touchstone. If she can make it, if Alice can make it, and Adrian can make it through whatever hell they both had to go, then you can make it too. And he said, my fans needed to know that. And so I shared that story with them, on stage, and honestly, you could hear a pin drop. It got so quiet, and there had to be a few hundred people in the audience, and I heard sobs, and I started sobbing, and Betsy started sobbing, and it was like this cathartic moment when I actually felt that little tiny piece of my heart, like, healed that I didn't even know still needed healing. Yeah. And it was my fans who gave me that, and it was that connection at that point that I felt like I got it. It finally friggin' makes sense to me. I am here for you guys. I am here to share the torment of survival with you all, because everybody goes through it. And that's the bottom line of life, I think, is that we all find our power within us, that light within us, to survive, because we all go through hell. And it's a matter of how we get back and how we slowly find our way back to that light, that thing that makes us happy, that thing that makes us feel alive, sometimes it takes a long time to get back to that point, and we have to be patient with ourselves, but always know it's out there, and be patient with yourself. You know, be patient. Don't be critical, because Lord knows I'm the worst. I'm so self-critical, but you can do it. You can do it, and just know there are people out there to help you. And if you don't have someone out there to help you, you find me. I'll help you.
Yeah. And I think that's what people respect about you most, is that you're able to and willing to.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to have to go through all that shit for nothing. Yeah. It's like, it's got to make some kind of sense. Yeah. And as far as writing a book, that was your question, writing a book. Yeah. That's what I've kind of been doing a little bit with my blogs on my new website. Mm-hmm. It's like each blog is kind of like a little, essay, because I don't want to do a book like everybody else does a book. This is what I went through. Da, 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 da. I want to do like highlights that people can like kind of just read, boom. And, for me, I've tried for about 10 years to actually write a book, and I've got all these beautiful little essays. And whenever I try to get back to that one spot, I get physically ill, you know? So it's like, okay, I'm omitting this, because I firmly believe when you find the poison, you have to lock it up so safely and put it inside double freezer bags, and then put it in a lead vault, and then throw it in the middle of the ocean, and then never go back and look for it. Because there's nothing good that can come back. There's nothing good that can come back from me going back to that ugliness. And if I write a book, that's what people want, I think. I'm not willing to give that up, because I don't want to go there again.
Yeah.
And I think anybody who's been to hell understands that. So my blogs maybe eventually will turn into a book, because what I'd love to do is share my art. So I'd love to start like do a painting next to an essay. That's what I'm kind of looking for. And so I figure my website is kind of like a precursor to that, maybe. I'm trying to figure it out. I'm 65, and my life is still a work in progress.
Well, there's not too many people doing a lot like you are at the age of 65.
I feel it's so important to share the fact that I could be barely alive in 1981 and here living life whole, you know?
Yeah.
And that's what it's about. That's what it's about. Because there wasn't any kind of help back then, and now there is. Now I'm happy to say there is. If you have a stalker, there's a stalking law. The FBI will actually pay attention to you, you know? And if you're feeling blue, there's phone numbers. Things have changed a lot. But now also we can go to YouTube, you know, and we can see an uplifting podcast. And I have a feeling you do a lot of that with your audience.
Yeah.
I mean, you reached out to me, you know, it's like, what's this young, good looking fellow reaching out to me for, you know, what do I offer you? I mean, so it warms the left ventricle of my heart to know that people still care. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you're in one of my favorite films of all time.
Well, I appreciate that.
Yeah. Friday the 13th. And just getting into the second one. That angers me that you were just killed off right away.
Ah, you can't believe that. Don't you see the still discussions? There's in-house fighting about that.
Yeah.
Alice is still alive. It was all a post-traumatic stress dream. Lord knows, if Alice had beheaded a person, she'd be suffering severe post-traumatic stress. That next year when that happened. So I like to say it's a horrible nightmare within a terrible dream. Alice is still in the woods. She's drinking fine Crystal Lake wine and painting beautiful paintings.
I like that ending better. I like that ending better.
So what are what are your plans today? By the way, is happy birthday to Betsy Palmer. Am I allowed to say it's All Souls Day today? Are you? Is this a November Friday the 13th?
Oh yeah, this is
podcast.
Yeah, well, my podcast is a sports and hip hop podcast, so I cover that those two subjects in my podcast. But every October, I make sure to try to interview my favorite actors and actresses from horror movies.
Oh, that's so cool! So yeah. I'm crossing over into sports and metal. Hip hop. Okay, yeah. Yeah, well, that's cool. That's cool. So I have an Instagram.
Yeah.
People follow me on Instagram, Adrian King _ official, because they hacked me like 3 times. I don't know. Oh, so, wow. Yeah. Don't know why. I guess people want to be Adrian King.
But not everyone can.
I don't know. Not everyone can do it. Yeah. No, it takes a lot of patience.
Yeah. What's the scene that scared you the most in Friday the 13th, when seeing it on the theater after the movie was put together and finalized?
Yeah. Well, without a doubt, when Harry Manfredini's music lulls us all into that little safe space and Jason comes up and attacks Alice, will forever be a jump scare. You know, it's just brilliant. Now, I didn't see him coming up, so that didn't scare me. You know, it's like that was all, I'm looking at the camera, I know he's going to come up. Okay. First time in the water, we only have one change of clothing. Uh-oh, we're going to miss the dawn light. This is the third time, so this is it. Talk about stress levels, right? Yeah. And the second time, I knew how cold that water was. And so I had to totally erase that out of my mind, too. But that scare, I think, without a doubt, is the best scare. I should ask you, because there are some brilliant ones in the movie. What's your favorite scare?
At the top one, the psycho scene in the shower. I don't think anyone's ever expecting that the first time. If we go back to 1925, yeah. I know one of the scariest scenes in cinema is when Lon Chaney Sr.'s face is revealed when he's the Phantom of the Opera.
Yes, that's very scary. Very scary. I thought you were talking about Friday the 13th. Oh, you want to bet outside of our movie.
In Friday the 13th, I'd say that's the biggest scare.
Yeah. Outside of Friday the 13th, let's see. Yeah. Probably Carrie, huh?
Yeah, the hand.
Yeah, that was good. And I think Victor Miller even said that kind of inspired a little bit of what went on. You know, everybody steals from everybody else, right?
Yeah.
But I'm just going to have to stick with that scare.
Yeah.
It's pretty damn cool. Pretty damn cool.
It is. What's your favorite scene as Alice in the movie?
Favorite scene. Well, you know, I had a lot of fun scenes. I think the strip Monopoly scene really was fun. That was added for, you know, because we needed a little more camaraderie on film and all that stuff. But it was a night that I remember was a lot of fun with Harry Crosby. He was playing us, Bing Crosby's son, Harry, was playing us some beautiful serenades on his guitar. So that was a lovely moment. But one of the funniest ones was before the snake was killed poor little snake. That scene was total improv. I mean, it was structured as a scene, but most of it was improv. So once we had kind of set it up, it just went crazy. It was terrible. We all loved it. The great part about it is that we were all young New York actors who were really having a great time. So it's not like there was a lot of acting involved. We were just being goofy kids, you know?
Yeah. I think what's so scary about Friday the 13th is when you realize that Bill is dead and you're all alone.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Making the coffee ADD style.
Yep.
You know, that drives people crazy. I was diagnosed with ADD in the late 90s, but obviously in 1979 filming, I had it too. You know, I didn't quite get that top right on, and it drives people crazy to this day. But it was just about the timing and the lighting on that scene, I think, too. Sean had a great feel for that going on. He really did. He knew how to bring the tension. And that lighting has been stolen afterwards. You know, you barely see some of the scenes. You're looking so hard. It was pretty. And it was, there were a lot, you know, everything on part one was fabulous. Everything on part two, not so much, but everything on part one was great. Filming with Betsy was amazing. She just brought my game way up, and it was an awesome experience. And the fact that we're still talking about it 41 years later just blows my mind, seriously, especially since Betsy was sure no one was ever going to see this movie.
What did you love most about Betsy working with her?
She scared the living bejesus out of me. I love that. I mean, I love that she treated this as if it was doing a film with Henry Fonda or James Dean. It didn't matter to her that it was 10 grand to buy a new car. She was going to give it everything she had. And she also told me as a co-actor that she wasn't going to hold back even during rehearsals. She warned me. And so, like I said, what I give her is the fact that she, as a young actress, she was the ultimate gift to me, because she would, I mean, acting is reacting. And she, once you plug into your scene partner, I had goosebumps all over my body. The woman freaked me out. She scared me. To this day, when I see that scene where she rolls her eyes back and she starts talking, I will, Jason, I will. Oh my God. It's just, it gives me goosebumps to this day when I see that scene. So she gave me the gift of being the best she could be as Mrs. Voorhees. And I think she gave me the best Alice that I could have given. Mm-hmm.
I think so. What makes Sean S. Cunningham one of the greatest horror movie directors of all time, especially with this in particular film, Friday the 13th, which is a classic?
Yeah, that's a great question. Desperation. I mean that in the best sense of the word, though, because sometimes desperation is, again, what starts the creative juices flowing, isn't it?
Yeah.
He had everything on the line with this movie. He really did. And he had to go back to his investors every time we were running out of running out of money. That made me laugh. That's another movie. Postcards from the Edge. You know that scene do you watch Postcards from the Edge? You know that movie? It's a great movie. Anyway.
No, I haven't seen that.
Oh, it's a great movie.
Yeah, I got to check it out.
It's a great. It is Carrie Fisher's, one of Carrie Fisher's autobiographical little books. And it's fabulous. It was made into a movie. So where were we now? Whoops. So much for that. What were we talking about? Help me.
What made Sean S. Cunningham, in particular with this film?
Right. Desperation. I really do think it was desperation and a willingness to listen, to be open to ideas, which is something I found afterwards, not always there on a set. Some directors just have, you know, their own set of ideas and that's it. Sean was open to listening to any ideas I had. There were certain lines in the script that I didn't think Alice would have said, you know. And he was like, yeah, I think you're right, you know. And when you get that from a director, it bolsters your confidence, which leads to a better performance, I think. Mm-hmm. But he was, he would let me, here's something. He let me watch my dailies. So we would get, back then, film cost money. It wasn't filming on a, you know, your audience has to understand back in 1980, we had big cameras. You had to save a lot of money for film, then another camera for slow motion film. It was a lot of money invested. So every time we needed more money. He had to go back to his investors, and it was very difficult. But he also was he got his daily sent out to the camp from what we'd shot the day before, and he would let me watch them. That's unheard of.
Yeah,
that is such a gift as an actress. Such a gift. So I got to grow with the movie, and we shot it basically in time, like as it was written, which is very unusual too. So Alice got a chance to actually grow into her character, you know, and grow into the fact that, you know, she started out as a timid character, and she grew into finding her core, you know, her strength, which had never been tested before. So again, a reason that she's a touchstone. A lot of people don't ever know what they have inside of them until they're tested.
That's right.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I think. I think it was a lot of things. It was a perfect storm. It really was, you know. We had a lot of great people on that film, and everybody on that film wanted it to happen. And then we got lucky, really lucky. And some of this is because of my mom, but my mom was coming in from Long Island for, I can only imagine, a matinee or whatever. And it was a cold January, and Sean, for some reason, I knew he was screening the movie at Magno on Broadway for distributors. And it's a small space, like, you know, maybe 12 seats or something. And he told, I didn't know who was going to be there, but I asked him, could I come see? I hadn't seen it. Mm-hmm. And I said, could I bring my mom? And he goes, can she be quiet? I said, of course. She's a professional. She can be quiet. So we sat like in the second row, and turn around, and he's in the back row with two distributors, I'm guessing. And so we watched the movie, and by this, you know, this is a mother that put me into showbiz at 6 months old, right?
Yeah.
She's like, okay, let's see what you got, right? And it's like, okay, the strip monopoly scene happens. And it's like, you know, I went to Our Lady of Peace. So she's like, you know, it's like, shh. And it's like, quiet, of course. The wind blows, the door open. Okay, fine. So then we're at the end of the movie, and she thinks, okay, I'm going to put on my coat. And I'm like smacking her on the knee, like, shh, shh, you know, just wait. And so, of course, it comes, all of a sudden the music, da da da, Alice is laying, all of a sudden Jason comes, my mother jumps and screams 25 feet into the air. And I then realized where I got my scream genes from. It was hereditary from my mama. And I turned around and I saw Sean shaking hands. One side was Paramount, the other side was Warner Brothers. I always say my mom helped me. We helped sell that film. Not that it needed too much help, but I can't help but think that she sealed the deal there. And they both wanted it, so they negotiated rights, and Paramount got all of North America, and Warner Brothers got the rest of the world. How do you like that?
Yeah.
So again, perfect storm, because Paramount released Friday the 13th like they never released a horror film, I think on over 1,300 screens or something like that. Frank Mancuso, who was the distributor of Friday the 13th, who was head of distribution, was made president of Paramount the next year.
Wow.
And his son, Frank Jr., was producer of Friday the 13th Part 2.
That's insane.
Yeah. So, and then talk about, you know, small world, small world, small. I didn't know my husband back then at all. I didn't meet him till 1986. So the funny thing is, he never got a chance to even bid on my movie. I said, why didn't you buy Friday the 13th? He said, it was gone. United Film Distribution was the independence little place. If you couldn't get a studio. So, yeah.
That's an interesting story. I never knew that.
Yeah. I have plenty of fun facts.
You do? How about working with Kevin Bacon? I mean, usually when people see Friday the 13th, they're like, is that Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, hard to believe, right? Yeah. Oh, he's such a baby. Oh, my God. Yeah, he was gorgeous. He was beautiful. I had a boyfriend at the time, but, you know, I did. He had a girlfriend at the time, but, oh, he was a cutie. But Harry, oh, I could have gone for Harry. I loved Harry. He was a sweetheart. Very soulful. But I'm telling you, everybody, if we had had social media back then, the world would have been so different. I would have kept in touch with everybody, but it was so different, you know? Yeah. It's so, so different. Nobody had a cell phone. Nobody had video. It was crazy times. I mean, you can't even fathom what that's like, right?
Yeah, it's insane. I don't know what I would do without it. I remember I had a power outage in the summer. I didn't have any Wi-Fi. I was like, well, now I know what it's like where people live in the 90s
oh, yeah.
and the 80s.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I know, man. It's tough. It's tough.
It is.
But it makes for better movies, you see.
It does.
Makes for better movies. Nobody can reach you on a cell phone.
Yeah, and movies have changed so much nowadays.
Yeah, exactly. So do you have a favorite horror? Oh, I got to plug Killer Therapy.
Yeah.
I didn't plug it yet.
That's right. Yeah, you got to plug that in.
Did you see it?
No, I haven't seen it. I have to see it.
You got to see it. Yeah. Oh, my God, it's fabulous. I don't do that many things, but this one I had to do. PJ Souls is in it from Halloween.
Halloween.
Tom Matthews. Uh-huh. And Tom Matthews is from Part 6. Is he Friday the 13th?
Part 6. Part 6.
Yeah. So he's in it too. Oh, it's wonderful. It's a social commentary type of, this is why I wanted to make it. It's not just a slasher. There's a story, which I think always makes a difference in a horror movie. There's an actual story. And who cares if somebody's killed if you don't care about them, right? So it's about a young man whose parents put him into therapy because he's having a rough time. He had a couple of bad therapists, and I play a guidance counselor, high school guidance counselor. I did my best. That's all I can say. But but what goes on after the fact is like people do have choices in life, even though you've been dealt a bad hand. It's up to you what you're going to do with it, and that's what this movie is about. So. Go watch it.
Where can I watch this? And as well as the audience.
It's dark. It's very dark in terms of, I mean, not visually dark, but just in terms of just the story itself. But it's, you can watch it anywhere. It's on wherever, Amazon. It's available anywhere. So Killer Therapy, it's, if you can't find a scary movie, watch it. Or if you want to see me in a scary movie, or PJ or Tom, watch it. And there's some great young actors too. I mean, there's some great performances. And like I said, it makes you think, it makes you, you know, question certain things like, what would I do? Interesting.
I know before you were asking me, what's my favorite horror movie? I can never say what my favorite horror movie is because I have so many. I think I could give you a top five.
Give me top five. I want to hear.
Yeah. Jaws, 1968, Night of the Living Dead. Halloween, yes. Friday the 13th, and Psycho from 1960.
I would say you have excellent taste.
Thank you.
All of those. I love your choice. How's that? I think you made some great selections. I'm glad you included me.
Yeah. Well, it is. I think that's Friday the 13th is one of my favorites of all time. And there's just something I always loved about that film. The first one, because I like the other ones. Well, I feel as though there's just something special about the first one.
I think that we were all so naive in a way. You know what I mean? It's like after, when a studio gets involved and puts money into it, somehow it takes away that rawness and that naivete that it's almost a polish. You know, it's unpolished. Does that make any sense?
Yeah.
I think the more money sometimes you have for a budget is a curse in an independent, because I think less money makes you be creative. It makes you figure things out and perhaps do it a little bit differently and not so easily. right?
Yeah.
Like when we were shooting some of the scenes in the rain, you know, they had the headlights on from the crew. We didn't have enough lights. They put headlights in from the crew and they got the fire department. They donated a couple of bucks to the fire department and had them hose us.
Wow. You know, I didn't even know that.
Yeah. Well, those are the things that you see. That's what I'm saying. Part two and three had money. They actually had somebody doing the nice gentle rain. Meanwhile, Harry Crosby and I are singing Christmas Carol being deluged by the fire department, you know?
Yeah. And going back to your point on the less of a budget for a movie, I think that's why I'm not a huge fan of the horror movies that come out nowadays, because it's just not the same. Like, you don't have the feeling anymore. And I know people don't like CGI. Neither do I. I like the real effects.
I don't like CGI. And Tom Savini's stuff still holds up. Yep. I mean, that is some serious incredible work that still to this day makes me cringe, you know, where CGI, I laugh, you know, it's like, why bother, you know? But yeah, I think there's something to that aspect of it.
Yeah, I think so. What's your top five horror movies? How many people listen? Oh, we usually have our 20,000 listeners around campus because this plays around campus.
And where exactly are you located? Because I used to drive by Queens Boulevard all the time. Are you
We're on the Jamaica Avenue.
Where Alexander used to be? Yeah. Where?
Jamaica Avenue in Queens. Yeah.
No kidding. Okay, yep. I used to drive by you all the time. Seriously. Yeah, on the way home. Yeah. I'm so glad I got to chat with you.
Yeah, thank you.
When all of this is done, all this pandemic crap, you'll have to make a tour, a little hike up to the camp in Camp Northburg and Boy Scout Camp in New Jersey. That's where we filmed it. Do you know about the tours there?
No, I never knew about the tours.
Really?
No.
Oh, my God. Okay, so where we shot was a real Boy Scout camp. It was called Camp Nobi Bosco, and it still is. And when we first were shooting there, we all thought it was an Indian name, Camp Nobi Bosco. Well, it stands for North Bergen Boy Scouts, okay? Mm-hmm. So the old Boy Scouts didn't want anything to do with Friday the 13th. They thought it was a terrible thing to be associated with it. So they would chase anybody who wanted to come on off. So people were constantly sneaking off and being chased off. And so about 5 years ago, one of the new Boy Scout leaders said, you know, let's get smart about this and embrace it. It would be a win-win. Or actually, my manager said it would be a win-win. And they all agreed. And so they started doing tours. And all the money goes to the Boy Scouts and two adjacent camps. We made them over $250,000 in three tours. Wow. Because the people came in from around the world, Australia, Japan, Brazil. Some guy on his honeymoon, for his honeymoon, came to camp. His wife was not happy, but he had a great time. But seriously, it's the most incredible thing. And it's crystallaketours.org or crystallaketours.com. And it's the Boy Scouts. And obviously, we're not doing it now, but they have the camp in perfect condition. They had enough money that they built Alice's trading post. You know, the one where she's trying to hammer the gutter with her nails.
Yeah. Like that.
You know, I would not buy a gutter from Alice, but her new trading post is fabulous. And it was built by us being there. And we had a reunion with Tom Savini and Robbie Morgan and the cop and Janine Taylor last year, I think. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun. And we had about 200 or 300 people up there. And I got to stay at the camp.
How was it?
Cool. It was fabulous.
Yeah.
It really was. I felt like I was in my 20s again. It feels the same. It looks the same. They embrace it. They know the whole, everything, where everything was shot. So when we're all back to doing the thing, I hope I meet you back at camp.
Yeah. Before I let you go, I wanted to ask you about a specific character, and I think he's one of the most important characters in the series, Ralph.
Ah, loved Ralph. I didn't do much working with Ralph, but you know, we had a couple of scenes there where he pops out in the pantry. Just an incredible character actor, and Walt Gorney, that's his name, Walt Gorney.
Yeah.
Can't say much more than that because I didn't work with him afterwards, but he sure was great. He was a great character actor, and a lot of people think that he would have been like in a prequel. It would have been great if he was like Jason's father or something like that, you know. But yeah, he was a great. We had a terrific cast. There's no doubt about it. Everybody in it was just memorable.
I hope they make a reboot or a direct one from part two or something, which you can be in it. Because I've heard you in interviews say that you would definitely be in another Friday the 13th.
Oh, yeah. Alice has a lot more to do.
Yeah.
You know? But in the meantime and in between time, she's just spreading the word of hang in there. Yeah. Be a survivor. You know, we can get through this together. And hopefully I'll see you back at camp soon.
Yep. Yeah.
And in the meantime, get on my Instagram because I want to stay in touch with you.
Yeah, I'm going to get in touch with you on Instagram, and we'll keep in touch. And hopefully, when everything with COVID-19 goes away, yeah, I'll have to do that.
I love that. Excellent. How are the Knicks doing?
Oh well, I think they're going to be looking for the number one pick again next year.
Yeah.
They're going to be doing terrible.
Yeah, well, they'll survive, right?
Yeah, I think they will, but they're never making the playoffs probably for another 10 years.
Bummer. All right. Well, we'll keep rooting for them anyway, huh?
Yeah. Yep. Is there anything else you'd love to let the audience know today, or?
Well, let me think. I would just like them to know that if you're having a rough day, just remember that if Alice can make it and I can make it, I really believe you can make it too. And I'm here to tell you, I do care about you because everybody needs someone in their corner. And I'm the person that hopefully can get you past that tough spot because I've been there and I know how hard it is sometimes. And I'm just here to show you you can be happy eventually. Don't expect it tomorrow, but hang in there because life has so much to offer you. And there's so much out there. And if we can all get past this insanity of pandemic and get to the next place where we're all moving forward. I mean, right now we don't see the end of the tunnel. We don't see that light at the end of the tunnel, and that's killer. But hopefully soon we'll be able to see that light. And then we focus on that light. Focus on that light and it'll get bigger and bigger and bigger. And once you get it toward the end of it, it'll be so worthwhile. It'll be so friggin' worthwhile. You'll never imagine what is available to you. Because through pain comes creativity, and you will create something incredible. You may not think it. You may not think it's even possible. But I guarantee you, give yourself enough time. And be open. Have a book around so you can write, or have a pencil around so you can draw. You have to facilitate yourself. Keep the windows open in terms of letting new ideas in. And so, you know, if you're down, visit my web. Maybe I'll have a blog that'll help you out. You know, I'm gonna write something about being out in nature, because I find that really helps when I'm feeling a little blue. Even if it's a 15-minute walk. Just take a walk, breathe in some air. It helps.
Yeah. Right, Adrienne sweetheart. King, I want to thank you for coming on my show.
I thank you. It was truly a joy. And we'll stay in touch, okay?
Yes, we'll stay in touch. Thank you. I want you to enjoy the rest of your day and stay safe. And
I will.
And amidst
and
the
happy
whole.
Happy Friday the 13th.
Yes, we're actually
happy
having
Friday
a Friday the 13th this month. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Enjoy it.
Yep, you too. Enjoy. Thank you, and stay safe.
You too.
Yep. Bye-bye.
See you back at camp.
Yep.